Hello, dental online trainers, and welcome to the Dental Online Training Sharecast. I am your host, Dr. Dennis Hartlieb. Each month, I'll be talking with dental experts who are doing amazing work in the world of dentistry and talk about how they got there, where they are today, and their influences and their journey in the world of dentistry. And as a bonus, I'll occasionally throw in a few of my solo bonding sharecasts, where I share a little with you about what's going on in my practice and lessons that I have learned along the way during my career. So tune in every other week to hear our latest episode. Hello, Dental Online Trainers. I'm Dr. Dennis Hartlieb, and welcome to this episode of DOT's Solo Bonding Sharecast. Today, I want to talk to you about my thoughts on implants in the aesthetic zone on young adults. You know, in my practice, I'm fortunate I got a lot of referrals from orthodontists and pediatric dentists in my community. And they send patients to me, typically adolescent patients, who are either missing teeth, congenitally missing teeth, or missing teeth from trauma. And these are, again, typically adolescents, teenagers, young adults. Now, in the early years of dental implant treatment, dental implant placements, We were obviously concerned about things like the amount of bone volume that patients had, soft tissue issues, but we've always been concerned about the age in which we place these dental implants on our patients. How old are these patients? And the thoughts back when I first started doing implant restorative work was that for girls, we wanted to wait until they were around age 16 or so, when they had finished puberty, and we made the assumption that their facial growth would be complete. For boys, it was delayed because boys are a little latent in their growth development. So usually in their 20s, early 20s, maybe up to 25 years of age, just like what we consider for skeletal jaw surgery for young men, we wait until they're into their young to mid-20s before we would do these procedures. And so we would place these dental implants thinking that our patients had finished growing. Back in the years, in the early years, in fact, it was recommended that we would do x-rays, wrist x-rays of patients, and we do serial wrist x-rays, and we would check to see if there's any growth between the years when we would do these wrist x-rays. Later, we developed evaluation for using lateral sephs, and we would do serial lateral sephs and make marker points on bony positions, and we would check to make sure that there wasn't any skeletal changes obvious before we placed dental implants on these young adults. But despite these efforts to determine if our young patients had stopped growing, despite these efforts, what we have found, unfortunately, is that there continues to be skeletal growth beyond the years that we thought that skeletal growth would stop. Any of us that have been placing dental implants or restoring dental implants, even in the posterior mouth, we're seeing in the posteriors, we're starting to see open contacts develop, typically on the mesial of the implant crown, distal to the natural tooth. We're starting to see open contacts develop in as high as over 50% of our patients. I mean, that's concerning. In those cases, we start to see food trapment, right? And that food trapment can lead to caries. Usually that caries is along the root of the tooth mesial to the contact or the distal portion of that tooth. And we can even start to see bony changes around the implant and the tooth as food is jammed into those contacts. So this is obviously a huge concern in the posterior mouth, but what about in the front of the teeth? And by the way, it doesn't seem to matter if it's upper or lower teeth. We're seeing this migration of the teeth away from the implant restoration, creating these open contacts consistently in as high as 50% or maybe more of our patients. So maybe of greater concern is implants in the aesthetic zone, because now it's not just about the health, but it's also about the aesthetics. So the issue with implants in the anterior region of the mouth, in the aesthetic zone, is that we may have continued facial growth, and that facial growth is where the face grows forward and downward. Now the teeth, they will migrate with the skeleton as the skeleton is growing downward and forward. But the implants, they act like ankylosed teeth, and they stay in their position. So this means while the other teeth are migrating downward and forward, the implant maintains its position. Now here's the concern, and here's the troubling fact. we thought that this downward facial growth ended at adolescence, right? We thought that it would be safe to place implants on our young women, 16, 17, 18 years old, and our young men, 22, 23, 25 years old, if they demonstrated that their facial growth had been completed. But here's the problem. What we're finding is that there are many patients, and the percentage of patients that's yet to be determined, that continue to have this downward facial growth throughout their entire lifetime. I'll say that again, throughout their entire lifetime. I have a patient, she's in her mid-60s. She's a nun in her mid-60s. We placed dental implants about 5 years ago. She was in recently, and we've seen that there has been change in the implant position relative to the neighboring teeth. In fact, several weeks ago, I had a patient, a young woman, she's around 20 years old. When we placed the implant and the implant was restored for congenitally missing lateral incisors. She was in recently, and when I did my examination, I noticed that the gingival margin of the dental implants were apical to the gingival margins of the neighboring teeth. And I did not remember that when we restored the case. So I took some photographs and I went back and I looked at the photographs from 4 years previous when we placed the implant. So she's 24 years old now. When we placed the implant, she was 20. So 4 years later, I go back, I take a look at the initial photographs and compare them to the photographs that I took at her hygiene appointment. And I saw from the initial photos, the gingival margin positions were actually about 1 millimeter incisal or coronal to the neighboring teeth, and now they're 1 millimeter apical. So you may say, hey, Dennis, maybe that's just some soft tissue changes, right? But here's the thing. There's also a step in the incisal edge position between the natural teeth and the implant crown. So that shows that, yes, there is tooth movement, that the face, as it's growing downward and forward, the teeth are moving with it, and the implant is maintaining that position. So what do we do? I think two things is, first of all, we have to start treatment planning differently. Let me talk about what we do in these cases. For my younger patient, we're going to continue to monitor, and we're going to see how much changes there's going to be. At this point, it has not become an aesthetic issue for her because she has a slow smile line. You can't see the gingival margins. You can notice that there's a difference in the incisal edge position, but because we did both lateral incisors, it looks symmetrical. But we have to keep a close eye on this because we may have to change the treatment that we did 4 years ago if we continue to see this facial growth downward and forward. For the second patient, my plus 60-year-old patient, we actually replaced the crown and we use pink-colored porcelain to mimic the soft tissue level as it should be, because alternatively, we'd have to start talking about soft tissue grafting. And the concern becomes, how many times can we do that? How is this facial growth going to continue to occur over time? How many times can we go through soft tissue grafting? When should it be done? And the new abutment and new crown made. What we also have to consider, though, as we're getting this downward forward growth of the face, not only may there be aesthetic implications, but there could also be a biological problem. That is, there may be bony architecture changes that are occurring that could compromise the neighboring teeth and the implant as well. So what do we do? We already talked about if the implants are in place and we're seeing changes, we may monitor, or we may have to take off the crown, replace the crown, maybe do soft tissue grafting. And how many times can we do that? So depending on the age of the patient, what should we reliably consider to be the best treatment for this particular patient? I don't know. I think that's something all of us are going to have to consider as we're doing these treatments. So here's the reason for my solo cast today. I want to talk about alternatives, especially in the aesthetic zone, when you have patients that are missing teeth, congenitally missing teeth, or missing teeth from trauma or other disease. So I want to talk about two solutions that I use in my practice. The first is what I refer to as a zirconia resin bonded bridge. What is a zirconia resin bonded bridge? Well, for our dentists out there, I want you to think about the old Maryland bridges that we used to make that were made out of metal, that were winged appliances They were very conservative in their treatment solutions because there was very little drilling that was needed on the abutment teeth. This prosthesis, this Maryland bridge, would be cemented from the palatal with the tooth contact replacing the missing tooth. Now, I refer to these as zirconia resin bonded bridge because I believe today that's the best material for us to be using. You could certainly use other materials like lithium disilicate, i.e. EMAX. The challenge, though, with if you're using lithium disilicate is that you need to have a much thicker connector than what you do when you use zirconia. So zirconia allows us to make the restorations of the prosthesis more aesthetic because we are minimizing the size of the connector. And zirconia also has a self-healing capability. So if there's an initial crack formation that happens in the zirconia actually can swell and close and seal off those cracks, giving us longer prognosis for any of these restorations that we're placing for our patients. So for me, when I'm replacing these teeth with a bonded bridge, I'm going to be looking at zirconia as a material, at least at this point, until we find other materials that might be even better for us. Now, something for you to need to know about these zirconia bonded bridges, what we've learned from Matthias Kern and others is that we should not be using two wing bridges like we did with the initial design of the Maryland Bridge. In fact, what we find is a single winged zirconia resin bonded bridge has a 10-year success rate over 90%. Whereas a two-winged bridge, Maryland or zirconia bonded bridge, literally has about a 66% success rate at 5 years. So we've learned that a single-winged resin bonded bridge has a much higher survival rate than a two-winged resin bonded bridge, regardless of the material that's selected. These zirconia resin bonded bridges are lab fabricated. Now, there's typically preparation that needs to be completed so that we have a margin for seating, but depending on the patient's occlusion, there may be very minimal preparation needed for the zirconia restorative material. What's absolutely critical is the bonding protocol has to be really exacting. I follow the Marcus Blatt's APC concept. The A stands for air abrasion using aluminum oxide on the zirconia wing. The P stands for primer, meaning that we need to use a 10 MDP primer on the zirconia, which is gives us our best bondability to zirconia. And then the C for APC concept is for the cement. We need to use a composite resin cement. These need to be bonded into place. You can't use something like a glass ionomer or other cements. They need to use a composite resin cement. So I followed the APC concept, and you really have to follow the protocol very strictly to have success with these bonded bridges. The second option for replacement of these anterior teeth in the aesthetic zone is what I refer to as a direct resin bonded bridge, or what is commonly referred to as a ribbon bonded bridge. What is ribbon? Ribbon is an incredible fiber reinforced material that I use for many clinical uses in the practice. But in related to this, I use it for periodontal splinting of teeth or loose teeth, but really for the replacement of a tooth as a direct resin bonded bridge. Now, whereas the zirconia resin bonded bridge, or the ZRBB, is a one-winged restorative solution, I have found that if I've tried that with my ribbon bonded bridges, that those fail, those break. So I do believe for the ribbon bridge or the direct resin bonded bridge, we need to use the abutments both mesial and distal. Many times, if the occlusion is ideal, we may not have to do any preparation at all for these direct resin bonded bridges. But critically, the ribbon has to be encapsulated with composite. You cannot have any of this ribbon that comes through because the frayed edges will become irritated into the patient's tongue, and that will start to break down the restoration. So oftentimes, we have to do preparation into the tooth structure, but it should be minimal preparation to allow room for that ribbon material to set inside of that space and then be covered over with composite. Whereas the zirconia resin bonded bridge is a two-step procedure where we take an impression, have the laboratory fabricate the bridge, and then cement the bridge on a second visit. With the direct resin bonded bridge, we do this all in one visit. So the ribbon material is bonded into place, and then using composite is bonded onto the ribbon to replace to create the missing tooth form. I generally will use the ribbon bridge when I have concerns about the teeth mobility of the central and the canines, because essentially I'm splinting those teeth together. I generally do not go across the arch, but I will for periodontal splinting. But in the case of the ribbon bridges, usually I'm just going from central to canine. If it's a case like a lateral incisor replacement, like a congenitally missing lateral incisor, though I've done these cases for missing central incisors as well. So the advantage for the patient is that it's a one-step procedure, meaning it's all done in one appointment. There is no laboratory procedure, so there's no laboratory costs, so that could diminish the cost for the patient. So from a time perspective and from a financial perspective, the ribbon bridge may be a better option over the zirconia resin bonded bridge. You know, let me say this, our goal is to be minimally invasive with our technique and today with the materials we have today and materials we get to use in dentistry. I used to tell my patients, if they were missing a tooth, let's keep this as a one tooth issue, meaning you're missing a tooth, let's replace this tooth with like a dental implant, a one tooth replacement for a one tooth problem. But given what we are seeing, both anecdotally and what I've seen in my practice and what we're seeing in the literature, maybe we need to take a step back. Maybe the most conservative option is to do some minimal conservative preparation of the teeth and go back to some of the old techniques that we used that while may have some issues, right? You can certainly have debonding of the zirconia resin bonded bridge. They are 90%+ successful over 10 years, but that does mean 1 out of 10 may come off and that may need to be rebonded. The direct resin bonded bridges, those can wear over time. Those may suffer some cracking. The composite can wear. They may need to be redone. They may need to be rejuvenated. So there's not a perfect solution, but are we saving our patients the challenges of facial growth when we place dental implants if we consider alternatives? So in my practice today, when I'm going to replace an anterior tooth, regardless of the patient's age, I'm telling them what we don't know. I don't know if you're the patient that's going to continue to have facial growth and an implant that I place initially that may be aesthetic, may become unaesthetic over the years. And if the patient is willing to own those consequences of that and say, I want to do the implant, then I'm 100% fine to do that as long as the patient's not a young patient. So I will tell my young patients and their parents, look, I would not recommend a dental implant. I'm going to recommend some sort of bridge, either the zirconia bonded bridge, the single winged, or the direct resin bonded bridge. And later in life, the patient can decide if they want to have like an implant solution when we have a better sense of who these patients are that are going to have issues with continued facial growth and those we don't have to worry so much about that and it should be more stable. Well, those are my thoughts on the zirconia resin bonded bridge and the direct resin bonded bridge and placing implants in the aesthetic zone, especially on our young adults and our adolescents especially. So if you're interested in learning more about zirconia resin bonded bridges or direct resin bonded bridges, you should check out our website, dothandson.com, and check out our course. We have a virtual hands-on course where we go through everything you need to know about zirconia resin bonded bridges and direct resin bonded bridges. And it's a workshop, so you're going to do the hands-on techniques with me live virtually to be able to give you confidence so that when you go to talk about this with your patients and when you go to perform these procedures, you feel confident to be able to perform them at a really high level. So thanks again for joining us today for this Sharecast. And as always, yours for better dentistry, I'm Dr. Dennis Hartlieb. Well, thanks so much for listening or viewing our Sharecast today. If you enjoy this and you want to get more information from Dental Online Training, then check us out at dothandson.com. That's one word, dothandson.com. Now, as a reminder, DOT has so many great opportunities for your learning. We have our wind and unwind webinars where we engage real time with our speakers and our viewers. During these live webinars, we bring in leaders throughout the dental industry to help keep you up to date on materials, issues, and techniques that affect you and your practice. We also have our monthly morning coffee and donut mentorship sessions where we review cases and issues with our participants and what's going on with their practices. We recently launched our DOT Study Club session where our DOT members present treatment cases. We do lit reviews
and our members provide pearls they found in their practice to help us all bring greater treatment to our patients. Hey, if you love doing hands-on workshops, you're going to love our live virtual workshops where our dental online trainers perform the same techniques that I'm doing with kits that we have shipped to them from the comfort of their own home or their office. DOT was the first to offer virtual hands-on learning, and our members just simply love these courses. And finally, we have an endless selection of our on-demand, pre-recorded hands-on technique courses to help you improve the clinical dentistry that you provide for your patients. So check us out on Instagram, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts at Dental Online Training. And you can follow me at HartleebDDS if you'd like to follow on Instagram. And hey, be sure to share this with your friends and colleagues who you think might benefit from this Sharecast. And if you don't mind, leave us a 5-star review if you enjoyed our conversations. This podcast is edited by Luna Clark and includes original music by Chris Peterson. Again, thank you for listening. I'm Dr. Dennis Hartlieb, yours for better dentistry.